Good evening, dear Sangha. We didn't do a sound check, so could I get some thumbs up if I'm audible? All right, the online folks, I see. Okay. So thank you for that warm introduction, Shokan. And I appreciate you all welcoming me here, whether you're in the Valley Stream Zendo or one of these friendly faces online, or even perhaps listening to this at some future time. I feel your presence right now. And before getting too far into things, I just want to say thank you to the Valley Streams Practice Committee for inviting me to speak. I do wish I could have been there in person, but I have an 8-year-old half time, and that half time has summer camp tomorrow. So I'll be reporting from here. Besides the wonderful and lengthy bio that was given to me, I just wanted to say a few more things about perhaps where I'm arriving from. Like was said, I am here in the city and have been for about the last decade and a half, with some time sprinkled in at Tassajara for some summers and practice periods. Besides that, I was told to read over my bio for Harris, and I missed one of the things. I came to Zen Center in 2012, ordained in 2019, but I took the precepts from Kyosho Valerie Beer, beloved Dharma teacher and sewing teacher, who I would suspect many of you have crossed paths with. And after she kind of put my feet on the Dharma path, I did ordain with Rinzo Ed Sada-san some years later. Coming here tonight, I'm coming through the lens of the roles that I've held at Zen Center, and some of those have been more, traditional, in the kitchen, in maintenance, as work leader, but actually a majority of my time has been in administrative roles, particularly work or committees, and now a role that center around Zen Center's evolving efforts in diversity, equity, and belonging. And as we know, Zen practice is not just something we do on the cushion or in service, as we just did not so long ago. But it's through our everyday actions. And so a lot of my practice has been involved in not only studying my own conditioned mind, but also bringing curiosity or inquiry to how we as Zen practitioners are in relation to diversity, inclusion, and belonging. So I just wanted to say that's the place that I'm speaking from. Yesterday, just a little over 24 hours ago, I returned from Tassajara. For those of you who aren't familiar with our layout, it's our Central California monastery that is quite beloved by most of us. And it was wonderful. I had not, Maybe I had not experienced it in such a way than the 13-year-old, or excuse me, 13 years prior that I had arrived to Tassajara on my 30th birthday, to be exact. And I was sitting in the plunge, the outdoor plunge, for those of you who are familiar with how the plunges are set up. And it's really quite serene. Like, you don't have to try there. And it was still as quiet and present as I had remembered. And while sitting there, I asked myself, without expecting a clear answer, kind of what had happened over these last 13 plus years. And the answer, as you might guess, is still unfolding. Yes, there's been a lot of zazen, bowing, work, breathing. Not too much has changed, but yet everything has changed. So this question of what happened, it felt like a good entry point for tonight's reflection, because something has brought us all here. Perhaps you could just call it our path, our karma, our breath. And so I wanted to begin with a little something that might be unexpected for a Dharma talk, perhaps. But that I think will help us land here in the space. I should have checked earlier. Were the bubbles that I had sent out there distributed? Are they available?
I have them sitting right next to me here. Would you
Yeah, if you
like me
don't,
to?
yes, if we could pass those out. And for those of you at home, I am going to be using some bubbles tonight to express some of the Dharma. If you have some on hand, I wish I would have sent out something because there's quick ways you can make it. But if not, you can just yeah, tune in, and I don't think you'll lose too much through the visual on screen or imagination. So I'm just watching those get passed around, and yeah. So I guess first of all, if
Yeah,
you could.
Eli, excuse me for a minute. I would like to
Yeah.
remind everyone that this is a carpeted space, so
Okay.
we would appreciate great caution in not spilling. Thank you.
Yes, do be careful. I've used these in very revered places with no issues yet, but that doesn't mean that there can't be made ones. So yeah, just carefully dip in, and we're not going to go crazy, but just a couple of blows I think will help. But whether or not you're there in the Zendo and able to put a couple of bubbles up, just imagine yourself as a bubble, formed from this same shimmering solution, perhaps shaped by a particular breath, lifted by the winds of your life, your memories, your losses, habits and hopes, carried through different joys, constraints, through silence and story. Until you landed here in this sangha on this Zoom this evening, here together. And so just for a moment, breathing in, feel your own presence. And breathing out, imagine your presence settling beside others. Breathing in, feel the shape of your life. And breathing out, feel the shimmer, the softening start to arise. So these are greeting bubbles, and not just in metaphor, but invitations to practice here, together, exactly as we are arriving. So to give you some context, I use bubbles, quite often to teach, all the time, whether it's to folks in assisted living or first and second graders every Friday, and of course the whole span of ages in between. I do use them for Zazen instruction at City Center, but also to deepen my understanding on inclusion and belonging work, and of course unpack Dogen, because you need something to cut through that kind of heavy wisdom. So tonight we're going to imagine and see ourselves as bubbles. Sometimes I feel that by using bubbles to drop into a different way of viewing ourselves and our unique differences, it can be easier than just talking about the relative aspects of us as humans. So if we think about it, each bubble is formed from the same solution for the most part, water, soap, or whatever makes this. But then we're each shaped by breath. Each of us or each bubble follows its own arc, reflects its own distinct light, and then eventually returns. Some drift quite high, some burst early. We vary in color, and others are very barely even visible. But yeah, you could say that we all belong, that we all arise from the same invisible kind of shared field. And what stands out to me the most is how each bubble reflects not just light, but the whole entire world. Very similar to that dewdrop we're all fond of. The whole sky actually can bend across its surface. You can see whatever's around, trees, faces, clouds. I love blowing them, particularly in sunlight. So do take these bubbles with you for tomorrow, if there's fair weather. And if you look closely, and you can probably see it in the space you're in, even for those of you online, that there's kind of two lights or two suns reflected in each bubble. And this happens because there's an outer layer of the bubble and then an inner layer you can also see. But I love this kind of small flickering membrane of sorts that really encapsulates the two truths, right? One sun, you could say, for the relative world, our stories, karma, culture, memory, so on. And then the other sun, perhaps, could be for the absolute, so the formlessness, the silenced, the unborn mind. And so each of these bubbles reflects both. Each person reflects both. And once we're around Zen spaces for more than like 10 minutes, we start to understand or feel into that we live every day in that paradox. Our great 13th century founder, Dogen Zenji, writes in the all-beloved Ginzo Koan that enlightenment is like the moon reflected in water. The moon does not get wet, nor is the water broken. The moon and the sky reflected in a dewdrop an inch wide. And yeah, as I was kind of pointing to earlier, if you think about it, bubbles are very much like these dewdrops. The entire universe is reflected from their particular place in space and time. So our life is very similar. Your breath, your body, the bubble it is reflects the cosmos just as it is right now. So even if a bubble, though it seems just like air, in some ways or in many ways is more than that. It's space taking its form, becoming visible. It's a moment of presence that shows both the outer and inner of our true nature. So from what I understand or from what the teachers relay, Zen asks us to recognize our story and return to the silence that it arises from, to reflect on the world and not become distorted by it. To float even briefly in such a way that presence becomes something real. So, okay, Eli, Mr. Inclusion and Belonging, what does this have to do with all of that? So I wanted to quote a couple of folks that I follow. One not particularly Dharma related, but is Dharma nonetheless. Social scientist Brené Brown says that true belonging doesn't require you to change who you are. It requires you to be who you are. She also said belonging is part of, or be, excuse me, belonging is being part of something bigger than yourself, but it's also the courage to stand alone and belong to yourself. An actual Dharma teacher, Reverend Angel Kyodo Williams, said, I realize that I have to, or excuse me, I realize I have a fundamental belonging that is not predicated on something external, because if that was the cause, I'd always be at tension with something that I cannot control. Right? And that's really huge, right? Not to be in tension with something that we cannot control. And so, becoming who we are is absolutely no small task. Most of us were taught to somehow filter ourselves to survive, to adapt, to make ourselves more palatable, or more safe. And in Zen, we get invited to this radical act of becoming something that's unedited. Suzuki Roshi once said, "When you are you, Zen is Zen." And yeah, to me, that's a lot of what belonging looks like. Not necessarily fitting in, but being true in the presence of others. But the thing is people can only practice that kind of belonging when there's psychological safety, representation. And representation can mean a variety of things. It doesn't have to be like in the flesh, but it does have to be connected too. So beyond that, well, when there's space that allows for vulnerability and the truth of someone to come forward, that's when that inner transformation, that inner kind of cultivation can take place. So it's really important that we realize that, DEI, whatever you want to call it, it's kind of an outdated misused term now, but that and the Dharma are not separate. It's funny, you may or may not be surprised. I reply to at least two emails a month with people angry that we are promoting inclusion and belonging. As they, they feel promoting dualism. So, I have nice emails that I write back that are very expressive and soft, but that's simply not the case. It's just the fact that, without arguing otherwise, creating sanghas where people feel safe enough to be whole, that's the only way I think we can provide the ground for awakening. So just to say that belonging is both an inner practice and collective responsibility. So I thought it may be good for me to at least say a little bit about what sanghas can do. And of course, I have mountains and gobs of this, but wanted to just share a few things that may be helpful. One is having shared agreements, which we do anyways, right? Most communities have some type of shingi or rules for practice engagement. But really identifying what your community norms are around listening, around pausing, around even like refraining from fixing, which can be something that's that we like to get into. Embodied invitations. So, begin group meetings with, taking a breath. And I'm sure this kind of stuff is going on, but I'm going to say it anyway, with a check-in or a pause, just to let people's somatic systems, arrive, rather than just kind of jumping into business. And something that takes time and kind of creativity, but, some way that stories and welcoming spaces can occur. Rather that could be some type of like at City Center during practice periods, we have a regular way-seeking mind, which gives an opportunity for a Sangha member to express how they came to practice. And so little things like that can be really ways to enrich our relationship to each other in Sangha. And also hear different gateways to the Dharma. I would say also silent inclusion acts. So just noticing who's left out. And you can extend an extra bow that way, an invitation, or just simply making space for someone to I don't know if y'all have tea or what the kind of setup is. Also rotation in roles, which we tend to do for our the sustenance of our Doan Rios, but making sure that new voices get included, that folks get to ring bells if they want, lead chants, or facilitate even if imperfectly, right? I know that at Zen Center for years we were a little slow on getting people an opportunity to start to not just engage in practice roles, but also lead. So don't wait on that. Another one is just don't ask, or excuse me, ask. Don't ask. Ask, and don't assume. Check, check in about what helps others feel welcome. I think that we're all concerned about doing things in a skillful manner, but if you have both of your feet on the ground in sincerity, you'll be okay. I do believe that. So I wanted to, I wanted to make sure I'm getting through it, but I want to make sure that I do leave some time at the end to have any questions be answered. But I wanted to talk a little bit more about, the actual practice of kind of studying the conditioned self. So, to study the self, as I believe Dogen's instructing, is to study the stories that we carry. And these stories all arrive, we all create from a silence that we're all rooted in. And so, to study things like inclusion, is to really study the stories that we carry, particularly about others. So some questions to maybe bring in from time to time could be, who do I trust without question, right? And just to feel into that, not with a judgment, but more just on a, even a bodily level, right? Just to feel where does some resistance or some ease exist, and start to study that. Often in this inclusion and belonging work for years, we would have these episodic trainings and kind of think of this promised day that we would really do the work when the, you know, temple might look different. And I just urge that, you know, this work can start right, excuse me, right now. Yeah, pardon me. One thing I do catch after coming back from Tassajara is a little dust cough. But really checking in on a bodily level, moment by moment, wherever you're at, you can always work on these muscles that will, you know, help us deepen in this area. So another question that I tend to bring up quite frequently is, who do I expect to understand me? All right. And that question can come a lot of different ways, but you know, one way is, do I speak, do I exist, do I position in only one way? It doesn't mean you have to change how you talk or not, but it can be an interesting inquiry to see how you generate what you put out. Another question is, who do I assume belongs and who do I unconsciously push away? And like I was saying, I give a lot of trainings at Zen Center. And when I give small, what I call bow-in trainings to like the kitchen, you know, I have them do this not only with people, but you can do this with daily objects. You know, this is all about preferences. You know, do I like to use the sponge? Do I feel like something belongs in this cabinet, something doesn't? There, again, these are little muscles that can be worked on before we're, you know, trying to meet another person or individual. And it's really important that we know, like any part of our practice or these kind of stones that we might uncover, that this is not about shame or correcting. That's another thing to practice with, another talk maybe for another day. But these practices, this part of your practice is about awareness. And that awareness can make room for choice. And that choice actually makes room for liberation. So again, when we're studying the conditioned self, we're not just doing the internal work. We're also preparing to relate differently, to engage outward. So again, and it might not be immediate in your daily life, but there's a multitude of ways we can do this by, understanding how our votes affect others and the depth of them. I heard in the NMA dedication, you know, and there's a lot that could be done and said about that. Also, volunteering is amazing. I'm here locally hooked up, like I said, with one of the grade schools here to do mindfulness. And you know, I don't know what they get from Mr. Eli, but they do get bubbles. And they do get introduced to breath. And I really feel that any way you can do that with a younger person is very valuable, especially at this day and age. They're coming into a world that is so editable, that learning how to just stay is ever so more important. So it could be all those things, or just simply, again, making space or connection with someone at a grocery store. And so I encourage you to try to let this be part of your Dharma, this kind of belonging cultivation. And it's really how we can honor, these two truths, right? Of the bubbles, that we pass in life, this silent field and shape of each story. So I think that I want to pause again and have a slight little practice exercise before I close out and open things up for questions. So I'd invite all of you to just take a moment and settle into your breath, settle into your body. And we've been sitting for a moment, so if you need to wiggle or stretch a little bit, please do feel free. And just for a moment, taking a couple of deep grounding breaths, perhaps connecting with the seat that's supporting you, chair, couch, however you're arriving and listening. And so you can do this with your bubbles or without. But we're going to allow, if you do have your bubbles, to assist in somewhat of a practice of metta or loving kindness. And I encourage you that don't have bubbles to get some sometime. And it's interesting, and I could go into more neuroscience about this, but when we do things like the Enmei Kenongo, or we do metta practice, and we cultivate these wishes of wellness, of kindness, and we generate them somatically, we are, I mean, of course, because of the principle of no self, and interconnectedness that's taking effect. But when we actually do bring those intentions out into poetry or to art, to other forms of spoken word or expression, they do create a little bit more, carry a little bit more weight in that expression. And so I invite you to, as we sit here, start to cultivate an orb, a big glistering bubble of wellness in your chest. Form compassion in whatever way feels appropriate for you. And then if you have bubbles or breath, we're going to engage in some metta. So you can go ahead and breathe in. And just thinking, may I belong just as I am. And breathing out, may you belong just as you are. And so a couple of times, and you can say this in your own words, non-verbally, but breathing in, may I belong just as I am. And breathing out, may you belong just as you are. And then breathing in again, may I be safe. And breathing out, may you be safe. And again, in your own time, in your own words, nonverbal, if possible. And then lastly, breathing in again, May we reflect with clarity. Listen to these big, beautiful bubbles. And breathing out, may we return to the same field. And breathing in, may we reflect with clarity. And breathing out again, may we return to the same field. So tonight, we met as bubbles, each shaped by different forms of wind, karma, each reflecting the world in our own beautiful way, each holding our own story in silence. May we know that we come from the same solution, and may we also learn to honor the ways that others show up, knowing that each of us have traveled a beautifully unique path. So we rise for a time, we reflect in the sky, and then we return. So I think that's all I have for now. I just wanted to thank you for your presence, for floating around with me a bit. And I hope that you have a couple of questions, comments, or reflections. I'd like to hear what's on your mind. So.
Pass the mic to Jim.
Hi, Eli. Thank you for this question you had, or you posed to us, this kind of rhetorical question that we might ask ourselves, which is, who do you think belongs? You know, to examine that, who do you think belongs? So my question is, if you find yourself, there's a moment when you think somebody doesn't belong, how do you deal with the shame of that thought?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great question. Thank you, Jim, for that question. And, you know, I would say if you go to Zen Center's website and type in shame in the thing for Dharma Talks, again, that's a whole other, beautiful topic. But in the sense that you're talking about, for one, when that comes up, that's kind of where your practice needs to go. I know that it sounds maybe troubling or maybe not what you want to hear. You want to, you know, stick in the game and maybe conquer that sense of belonging, right? Because I think that we all, or a lot of us, have taken vows that we really are sincere about. And so when we do interface with another being, especially in, have that feedback, it's really difficult not to feel a sense of let down or shame. And so instead of trying to go into that, the shame is where you need to study. I usually do that just by dropping into a very much a somatic practice, similar to as we are in Zazen, with just kind of, I don't want to get into just open awareness, just holding the actual felt sense of hurt and paying attention to it. If it's more troubling, I will use some type of regulation, practice, to just simply ground that part of myself. Once I can get there, then I can usually bring in a little bit more inquiry, or curiosity to why that was. Sometimes it's not directly apparent, to me. Like it maybe is more kind of like a vibe thing that I am not aware of. Quite often I am somewhat aware of what's coming up for me, right? Whether it's a past experience that, that I incurred harm or fear. And then again, I need to do with that sense. It's hard not to kind of go on the outside and for me to kind of self-explain why I should, feel that this person belongs. But that kind of conceptual overlay for me doesn't usually resolve that felt sense, which is really, I think, what was missed in this whole last kind of 10-year wave of kind of social justice intensity or awareness was we did a lot in the head, got a lot of, you know, we had a whole branch of academia, we have terms and structures that were really kind of focal points, which I think cause a cacophony of more harm sometimes, when I think most people or all of us need to engage with these dynamics on a more somatic level. So I'll pause there, but that's what's coming up for me right now. Is someone talking? Sorry, I can't.
Hi, I'm Rose. Thank you for
Hello, Rose.
Your lecture. I just wanted to tell you that your I believe it's your daughter's paintings in behind you.
Oh yeah.
Those Waldorf paintings bring a lot of comfort and joy.
That's funny.
I just like
her out.
Hear their little voices. Our children are in their 20s now, and so it's comforting. Lovely. Thank you.
So pleased that you could sense the paintings and their origin. Yes, my daughter blesses me with tons of art that awes me.
You didn't hear that.
I have a closet full. I've made like cards out of them and snowflakes and like tags for food.
That's right. This last kind of holiday season, I was making bookmarks.
Yeah,
with them. Yeah. For those of you who may not know, we have children that go to a school that really emphasizes embodiment and art. And when they're young, they make literally, I have 50 of those probably from, the 2 years of kindergarten and first grade. So, yeah.
Hello, I'm Dora Lee, and this is a whole territory that's really important to me, and I was just thinking about this time a while back. I was in a racial social justice book club, and we were reading a book on that was related to racism with exercises in and so forth, and we got together, and I decided to be the first one to share my experience, and so I went into great detail about, you know, how important this book was to me and how much I got out of the exercise. And then I was just kind of waiting for other people to kind of share it too. And it turned out that literally I was the only one in the group who got anything out of the book.
Mm.
I mean, people said, oh, I didn't like the book. It was too strong. I mean, they had all these criticisms. And I just had this experience of being the only one.
Mm-hmm.
Who had mm-hmm. a point of view. It was different. I was like in the total minority, and it was just very powerful because I didn't feel like I belonged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for sharing. It's so interesting how that can happen. And you know, one thing I wanted to say, and it actually goes back to the last question around shame is, this work cannot come without a lot of discomfort, actually. I won't say some, and we'll ask of us to look in places that may be hard, to ask difficult questions. And I think that our whole entire Zen practice actually should kind of be like that. There's three, have anybody heard of like the concentric circles of learning? Maybe. Okay, I see some head nods, but in basic, I won't get into a long thing, but you could think of our learning abilities as fitting in three concentric circles. The middle circle would be an area that we relate where we're just safe. So let's say in conversations, we're not on any pushing any edges. We're really kind of, scaling back or attuning to our needs for safety. And then you could say in the outer layer is where we get into conversation are just in complete anxiety or completely hit a wall of shame or the inability to focus or you're enraged. That also is a place where it's not good to learn, that you're just not able to absorb. So they talk about this middle layer, which kind of puts you on the edge of your seat, where you do feel some clear discomfort, some dis-ease, maybe some fear of being maybe wrong or shamed or embarrassed, even perhaps, but that's where we actually learn, that's the place or the mindset where, the most richness and the most depth can be derived from. So I would say that a little shame is good. And then to this last comment, thank you for sensing into that space where you may have not felt a sense of belonging and to lean into that courage.
Is there any Zooms? Sean has his hand up. Sean, on Zoom.
Thank you. Good evening, Eli. Thank you so much for your talk. Good evening, Sangha. I don't really know how to phrase this question. It's just a story that comes up in my mind of a writer that I read one time, and they were in some place where it was a heavily militarized sort of police state type situation. And the writer made the comment that the guards standing there with their machine guns full of their self-loathing. And I think there's this kind of moment when we may have encountered someone who is just so full of hostility or defensiveness or self-loathing. You can't know for sure because they don't have a sign printed on their forehead that says, I hate myself. But, you know, you just surmise that you don't feel welcome, even if it's like somebody who, and it could be very slight, you know, very, very small, just someone who won't make eye contact with you or whatever. And I know we always sort of talk our talk, and it's wonderful, and it's a beautiful practice of just saying, well, extending compassion, extending patience, extending understanding and acceptance of them just as they are in this moment. But I just wondered if you had, Eli, any more insight or thoughts into how we can encounter and meet people who are perhaps feeling very hostile, very defensive, or afraid. I know those things are so tightly linked. Anyway, I'll just leave the question there because I could go on and on. Thank you.
Yeah, great question, Sean. And I feel that, I think most people have encountered this in some dynamic, if not in their personal circle, in the wider social sphere. And I don't have a spot on great question for you, right? I think this is one of the most, the greatest polls I think that Buddhism asks of us is to kind of meet these things that at least for me feel relatively impossible, right? And again, it's going to sound kind of loopy to the first, you know, questions that came up. But I really have to just heal that disconnect in myself. You know, it's the hard part of non-self, or yeah, this re-sense that we have, like this individual life and this individual time frame. That person, what maybe afflicts them, or the separation that they may feel, it may not get resolved in this lifetime. But it doesn't mean that our compassion, that our willingness to be with, also doesn't heal that bigger picture. And so it's, yeah, it can be so difficult because we experience life from right here, right now, and like that little bubble. But I really do believe that when we tend to our bubble, we are attending to the collective. And you know, I think in times like this, where I am feeling, you know, I have different shades of this. One that's a little bit more close and familiar is I grew up, was born and raised until I moved to Tansahara like 14 years ago, you know, when I was 30 in Arizona, which is a very different, let's say, just social context than San Francisco. And I have friends that very much vote completely differently than me. And there's been really trying times where I feel like I just cannot reach. And so I have to look for the small areas where we do. So I have a friend, Tom, where we've had long, I mean, I'm embarrassed as a priest to say, these long text messages that are just books of just cussing and fighting and just degrading each other, right? Because it's felt like that sometimes. And then, you know, fall comes and he sends me the link for his, or a picture of his girls and selling Girl Scout cookies, right? And so I got the visa out, and there is something there that can connect us underneath these big disconnects. And so that might be another point, is to you know, try to identify with their children, or identify with someone in their community that might have to put up with that realm. So try to put your compassion where you feel like it will land, and then keep practicing for the parts that don't. So
Well, the moment you said it reminded me again of your beautiful practice this evening with the bubbles, is that we're all of the same bubble. We're all of the same solution. And so that this is one way that just reminds me, is that I am them, and they are me, and we're not different. So thank you for this.
Yeah, thank you for the and Thich Nhat Hanh's poem, "I always call me by all my names," is one you can reference when feeling stuck. So I think that's my pause time. I got some instructions, 8:55. There's something else going on. Not me.